This is James Cullum, and today would be, let's see, it's 2019, and I'm interviewing my mother, who just turned 80 years old yesterday, and seemed that this was a good time to do this. We are in Stevens Mill, Maryland, and I will let my mother tell you her name and today's date.
My name is Mary Beth Curran Cullum, and today is February 11th, 2019, and yesterday was my 80th birthday.
Happy birthday!
And it was a very exciting weekend. I have 5 children, and they all would have been here if it hadn't, for the first time, and I don't know how many years, snowed in Seattle, where my second son, Ray, lives. He's just moved out there and was sitting in an airplane at the airport when they closed the airport. So Ray is not here. We all missed him very much. But the other 4 of my children were here. I had a few of my grandchildren who live in the area. All of my grandchildren, my daughter's children, who live in the area were here. And my son Patrick brought his daughter Annie. Patrick lives in Raleigh with his wife Bonnie, and Spencer and Annie are his children. Jim came the furthest from Colorado, and he is here by himself. His family is back in Colorado and Washington, and we will see them in May. So that's when his oldest daughter, Taylor, graduates from college. So that's where we are.
Well, thank you for your name in today's date.
That's going to be hard to get you to open up. Alrighty. Let's see here. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child?
I was the oldest of 3 children. I have 2 brothers, Jim. You'll notice we kind of stick to names here, James, Jim, and my brother Patrick, Pat, and I have a son, Patrick. So as I say, we use names up. And I was born in Bayonne, New Jersey, and lived there until I was going into my junior year in high school, when my father, who worked for SF Standard Oil in New York City, was able to move us from Bayonne out to more of a suburban area in Maplewood, New Jersey.
Was that a nice house? I mean, was that a good move?
Oh my, yes. I mean, my mother was one of 10 children, and my grandparents were in Bayonne. That's my mother and all her family were there. When my parents first married, they moved to Cranford, New Jersey, which was out in the suburbs, and they built a home there. My mother didn't drive, and I was born there, and my brother Jim was born there. And Mom was really isolated because she didn't drive, and because all her family was back in Bayonne. So my parents sold that home and moved back to Bayonne, where they rented places to live for the next, I guess, about 10 years before we moved back out to Bayonne. That's a long all my explanations seem to be long.
No, it's all right.
That when we moved out to Maplewood, I had gone to Catholic schools all my life until then, and I went to the big, very good high school, Columbia High School. And it was for the Maplewood South Orange School District. And through the years, it seems like I have met, it doesn't matter where we go, my husband's continually amazed. I find somebody who went to Columbia High School. It was a great school. Still is a great school. And I could sing you the song if you want me to.
Go ahead, sing the song. I'm in.
Anyway, I had a very, very happy childhood. I did. The only thing, I had a sister born before me who died. And I never knew her, and I always missed not having a sister. I thought that would be nice, but my brothers more than made up for it, and we unfortunately have never lived in the same area for very, very long as adults, but we do try to keep in touch. So I guess that was my high school. My growing up, do you want to go to college or do you want to go?
Hold on, wait a minute. Instead of being prepared, how old were you when you? I had no idea. Oh, I didn't know this.
Well, it's, I mean.
I haven't been paying attention. I don't know.
No, but, it was something that was just, it didn't happen. I mean, so it just wasn't talked about a lot in my family.
Was your sister born or not born?
She was born, and she died shortly after she was born.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's
gracious.
One of these. I think my mother was told not to have another child for a couple of years, but very quickly I appeared.
Okay. She was older than you. I thought from whatever you said that she was young. She was old and older?
No, it was before me.
Oh, my goodness. Mom.
Yeah. And
wow, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, not cool.
It's funny when you I guess it's not something you think a whole lot about, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, you have these stinky boys. Okay.
It was a very happy growing up with my mother's family, with the 10 children.
Yeah.
I believe 36 cousins. The last time we counted them, my father was he had one sister, so it was kind of. Quite a contrast between the two families.
So 36 cousins means your mom. Yeah, your mom had a big family, and then your
dad.
Yes,
and then my dad had just the one sister, my Aunt Mary, but she never married, so all my cousins were on my mom's side. And a few of those, I guess, just really. Three of those cousins I've stayed in touch with all my life. I still am in touch with Alice Marie and Pat Smith. So it was. They say it was a happy, easy time. And when I graduated from high school, I was accepted into the College of William & Mary in Virginia, which was the only place I wanted to go. So I was very fortunate. And I went there for a year and came home, and my dad asked me what I was going to major in, and I told him history, and he said that in that case I wasn't going back to college then, because I was probably just going to get married, and I didn't need to have a four-year degree.
Certainly didn't need to know anything about history.
And he said the only thing you're going to be able to do is teach school, if that's when you wanted to, you know, that just wouldn't be worth sending me back to William & Mary. That night, my mother and dad did. I don't really ever remember hearing them argue. I don't know if they went to bed that night. But when I got up in the morning, I was to find something else that I was interested in that I could study and do, and my father would send me back to William & Mary. I make him sound terrible. It wasn't.
There's a compromise.
You know, about a week later, he came home and he said he had done some inquiry. He asked me what I was good at. What did I like? What was my favorite subject? And my favorite subject was always math, but I had not continued with it for some reason. When I went to college, it just went away. I didn't have any math courses, but that was what I loved. And so Dad came back about a week later. And he said I was to go to work with him the next day, that he had some women he wanted me to talk to. And he took me to the refinery that Esso Standard had in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And I met two women from IBM who were systems engineers. They programmed the big computers, and they traveled with the computers. In those days, you couldn't buy a computer. You had to rent it from IBM. And IBM would totally program it and teach you how to use it. And a systems engineer programmed the computer, taught the people at the place they were how to operate the computer, and moved on to their next job. And these women were just so exciting and, I thought, amazing. So long story short, I studied mathematics at William & Mary, and when I graduated from college, I had a job offer from IBM, I had one from Bell Labs, I had one from SL Engineering and Research, and that was the one that offered the most money, so guess what? I went to work for SL Research and Engineering and programmed the 7090, which was the, if you saw Hidden Fences, that was the huge computer that launched the space flights.
Wow.
And I worked there about 3 months, and what I did was I would talk to the engineers, because the theory in those days were engineers knew what they wanted to happen, but they didn't know machine language, so there had to be this person in the middle who talked to the engineers, understood what they wanted, and then programmed it, and that's what I was doing. It was a very exciting time, and after 3 months, my dad and my mom were transferred to New Orleans with ESSA Research and Engineering. I mean, with Exxon, I'm sorry, was now ESSA Standard is Exxon. And they're moving all their offices out of New York City down south, where it's less expensive to live, or was at that time, and for them to operate. So my mom and dad were heading to New Orleans with my two brothers, and I decided to go with them. I left New Jersey, and we headed all of us to New Orleans to a totally different life.
Mm-hmm.
And in New Orleans, I went to work for IBM. And my dad and mom stayed there for about five years before they transferred to Houston, which is where they lived for the rest of their time together. And I stayed in New Orleans because at IBM, I had met Ray.
Your dad was right.
I did just get married. You're right. So I met a fellow IBM, Ray, and he was actually my teacher. He is he had just gotten back from his 2 years in the Army. His mother worked for IBM, and he was taken on as a part-time basis while he was finishing his college in New Orleans at Loyola University. And we married in 1963. IBM at that time had a policy that if you were pregnant, you could no longer work for them. So my husband had left his part-time work at IBM and was working for Boeing, and wanted to get back to work at IBM, and I think that's one of the reasons our son Jim was born so quickly. his dad wanted to get back to IBM, and I wouldn't be able to work there anymore.
Wait.
Husband and wife were not allowed to work in the same office.
I know a little bit about how babies are made.
that was his motivation, I'm sure. And that at any rate, we'll take it just a break here.
Which is perfect.
Hi.
All right. We've relocated here for part two of said interview. All right. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences on your life?
Definitely my dad. My dad was... I was just a real daddy's girl, I guess. And my dad's religion, his faith was very strong. And I can remember, I said I went to Catholic schools. And in elementary school, during Lent and Advent, the elementary school would go to Mass at 8:30 or 9 o'clock before 8:30 before school started. And my dad went to 7 o'clock Mass before he caught his train into New York City. And I would get up and go to Mass with my dad at 7 o'clock and then go to Mass with the school at 8:30. My brothers were convinced I was going to become a nun. I don't think they understood as much as that was my time with my dad. And I just always thought, I was always very proud of him. He was an usher at church always. And in those days, in Bayonne, it wasn't, were you a Catholic? It was which Catholic church you went to.
Right.
There was the well-to-do Irish Catholic Church, the sort of okay-doing Catholic Irish Church. There was the Polish, there was the Italian, just on and on. So my dad was the ushers in the church were the Holy Name Society, was the name of them then. And on Christmas Eve at midnight mass, my dad's the head usher, and he would be in his tails at mass. And at the Holy Day of the Holy Name Society, there was actually a day where all the churches got out and led, paraded through the streets of Bayonne, and my father would lead the parade again in his tails.
Wow.
And yeah, my dad was a very handsome man, and one of my mother's sisters used to call him the senator, because he was also a master of ceremonies at a lot of things, and he just was always, always very important to me. And dad came and lived with us after my mother died, and he lived with us for 7 years in Raleigh, North Carolina. He left his mom was buried in Houston, and dad, even after he sold his home in Houston, he was just visiting us, but he visited us for 7 years.
For 7 years.
So my dad having a tough time now, and he also helped me find the work I loved, which you heard that before. Second, may actually have been my friend Sue, who I met in when we moved to Maplewood, and I was a junior in high school. And anyone who's ever moved when they were junior in high school knows that's a hard thing to do. And to have this girl who was super popular and smart and had been in the school forever, grew up there, to be my friend was wonderful. And she just, Sue has this joy of living that is incredible. And, I mean, Sue worked in the library at a job. I think we made 35 cents an hour, something like that. So I had to work in the library. I worked in the library. And those 2 years in Maplewood, in the school there, made a whole, I almost became a different person from the Catholic schoolgirl who went to a private academy in Jersey City for the first 2 years of my high school. So Sue was very important to me. We did not go to the same college. She went to Syracuse University and studied art. I went to William and Mary and studied math. The second Christmas we were home from school, Sue still laughs and tells the story that she was building a gorilla out of toothpicks, and I got a slide rule for Christmas. And she was like, how is this happening? But it happened, and we stayed friends all through college. I can remember we talked about once a month on the phone, and I called her after I was elected president of my sorority, Kappa Alpha Theta, because I was so excited. And I called up, and Sue, I called her up the night she was elected president of her sorority, Kappa Kappa Gamma. So we parallel paths, different places. And when we left New Jersey and went to live in New Orleans, very shortly if we did that, I got a phone call from Sue, the man she had been dating, David, who was a little older than we were. He was a veteran. He was came back and finished his school. He was a couple years older than we were. But they were getting married, and Sue wanted me to be in the wedding. And I had just gone to work for IBM and didn't have a whole lot of money, just started. And my mother, who was a very practical person, sat me down and said, look, Mary Beth, you and Sue were great friends, but you're far away, you're starting your family, you should be in different places. You don't have the money to go, so you just need to not do this. So I took that. My mother usually had good advice. I took that advice, and I did not go. When I got married in New Orleans, Sue had just had a child, and I didn't even invite her to be in my wedding. But even with all that, somehow we got back together, and Sue was here for my birthday yesterday. And through the years, particularly when we lived in, we spent 13 years in outside Philadelphia while Sue was in New Jersey, Sue and her family, Sue and Dave and their kids, and our families became very close. So those two people.
All righty then. Can you tell me about one of the most difficult moments in your life? And you don't have to if you don't want to.
You're going to know what it was. When our fourth son, Patrick, was born, he was a Highland membrane baby. The flap on his heart didn't open when he was born. He didn't cry, so that didn't open. I think I've got that right. The Kennedys, John Kennedy and his wife, lost a baby named Patrick to that very thing. It's a thing that they cure today with a pill. You don't hear of it anymore. But it was a very dramatic time. As soon as Patrick was born, they took him by ambulance down into Philadelphia to Hahnemann Hospital, which was one of the leading teaching hospitals in Philadelphia. And Patrick spent 8 weeks in their intensive care nursery there. And going down there and feeding him and holding him and was incredibly hard. And we were off by ourselves. We had three children that we had to take care of while all this was going on. And we were relatively new in the area that we didn't have a whole lot of support. When I think about now, why we didn't ask for help, I don't know. But we would buy comic books and candy for the kids and put them in locked car in the parking lot at Hahnemann Hospital and go in and visit Patrick on the weekends. When school was in session, we were good. But on the weekends, that was what we would do. And Hahnemann Hospital was where all the shooting victims in the city, the police were in and out. They were constantly
in the ambulances. Hospital, yeah.
And I don't think our three children really knew why we were leaving them there. And then to go up and care for this tiny little baby who Patrick was 5 pounds when he was born. They stopped telling me how much he weighed after he was 2.5 pounds. He went into heart failure, had open heart surgery. Long story short, 8 weeks we took him home. He was the first baby to survive in that hospital.
Yep.
Anyhow, and today he's a treat.
He's doing okay. Yes.
He's one of the happiest men I know. He's a media archivist at UNC Chapel Hill, and is married with two wonderful children and a wife. And
but that's
just so amazing. But
how did you get through? I mean,
I honestly was almost that nothing bad had ever happened to me, and it wasn't going to now, but it was really dad was much better.
Really?
I mean, he was working for IBM down in the city, and he would travel by train, and I would, when the kids were in school, I would get on the train and come down I was breastfeeding Patrick and bringing frozen breast milk, and I would get on the train.
You were way ahead of the curve.
And
yeah.
Well, that's they were just starting that
just
stuff.
Just figuring that out, yeah.
And I would. It was very hard for me. I had a little problems with traveling on the train. It felt claustrophobic and like I was never going to get there on this wonderful 20-minute trip. But Ray would meet me at the terminal, and once I was with him, I was fine. And he would walk me to the hospital, stay while I visited with Patrick, and then bring me back to the train station. And then one day he said, I can't do this anymore, Mary, that I have to work. And he had, though, gotten me to the point where I got on the train and went by myself. But so when the time that I couldn't do it, he was there.
You leaned yet?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's see here.
Do you have any happy questions?
What advice would you give to your teenage self?
Holy cow. To my teenage self. That I wasn't fat. I thought I was. I don't know why. But I wasn't.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's good. All right. You want a happy one?
No, that's all right.
You can you tell me one of your happiest memories?
From how long or from, does it matter?
Any, no, you've got 80 years to draw from.
For most recently was our 50th wedding anniversary when we had all our children and grandchildren at the beach. And the grandchildren were all still young. And it was a beautiful, beautiful time where all my kids cook and my children-in-law and cook, and we just had, sounds like food's very important.
Yeah, it is.
But we just had a beautiful, beautiful time. As far as I know, there were no conflicts. Everything was wonderful, and the kids were still young enough that being at the beach was fantastic. We've done it again since then. Kids a little older, and those darn thing that I'm talking into right now is in your hand. So it was a little bit different, and one of the granddaughters wanted to bring her boyfriend, and it was just... I understand why she did, but things, so it wasn't as easy as when the kids, so many things, as when the kids, all the grandchildren and everything was little. And I hope we have more of those to come. For an early happy memory, it started not happy, but it was something that I never forget. When my brother Jim was born, he was born 2 days before Christmas, and I was not quite three. And my dad, who had never cooked a meal for himself in his life, when my mother went to the hospital and Jim was born, they kept ladies there, of course, as you know, for a week or 2 weeks. I can't remember. It was a while. But Dad took me to my mother's parents' home, and we were there for Christmas. And my Uncle Bob was the youngest of my mother's brothers, and he was probably around 18, maybe. And my grandfather was a great trickster, and they told me constantly about how I would have coal or potatoes in my stocking if I had been bad, and I wouldn't have any Christmas presents. And in those days, all my aunts and uncles would be at the house for Christmas, and many of my cousins, I can't tell you how many were there that day, but there were probably 40 people in the house for when it was time to open Christmas and presents. And it was early in the morning, and I went and got my dad, who was in another bedroom. I woke up and went to get him, and I opened the door, and there was a stocking full of coal and potatoes hanging on my door. And I just cried and cried and cried. And I went and got my dad, and I couldn't figure out. My father was so angry. And we went downstairs, and my Uncle Bob and my grandfather are cracked up. They are doubled over laughing. And I am still sobbing, and I go into this room that's full of all my cousins and aunts and uncles, and they all got mad at my grandfather.
How old were you?
I was three. I was
three. 3 years old, and they gave you this?
But then everybody got so mad at them. My grandmother wasn't speaking to either of them, and I got so many presents.
I was waiting for the happiest moment of my life.
And now, when I think about it, it's just a memory that just stays with me, and it's funny now, and it was just beautiful.
Through tremendous pain, you come great joy.
And I don't know, as a result of that, but my Uncle Bob was drafted in World War II, or enlisted in World War II. He's a Marine, and he wrote me letters all the time. He was in the South Pacific at the end of the war. And I can just remember I kept the letters in a box in my closet, and I would go and sit on the floor of the closet and read these letters. And he always addressed them to my redhead. And I had red hair or strawberry blonde hair when I was young. And I just, to be his redhead was wonderful. And so that I guess maybe is what I was getting to. Unfortunately, I don't know what happened to those letters. But
wow.
I can remember them. Yeah.
That's a great story. That's a good one.
Let's see here. Oh. And here we are back again at the interview. Tell me about some of the most important lessons you've learned in life. That's a nice, easy one for Mom.
Yeah. It's probably all going to be related to family. When Ray and I got married, Ray had an older brother, Richard. Richard was a PKU baby. He basically had an allergy to milk, a thing they didn't know about then. And about the age of five, his progress, people know what it is now, stopped. And Richard started to slow down. And eventually he was found to be, his mental age was about 12. He never progressed past 12. And Ray and Richard's mom, Mary, had been divorced since about the time all of this started with Richard. Ray is 5 years younger than Richard. His parents tried to stay together, but his dad couldn't handle, at least this is, of course, this is from Mary, but his dad couldn't handle what happened to Richard. He couldn't deal with it. So Ray and Richard grew up with a single mom. Mary had graduated from St. Louis University. She was a student at Sophie Newcomb in New Orleans, and her dad moved in her senior year of college to St. Louis, and much to Mary's regret, she did not graduate from Sophie Newcomb, but from the university in St. Louis. And they returned to New Orleans, when Mary was, and her husband, Ray Sr., was divorced, Mary went to work for IBM as, she had a degree in English, as a secretary. And her father was quite well-to-do. So when Richard was discovered with these problems, her father helped her made it possible financially for her to send Richard to the Langhorne School in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, which at the time was about the only school for helping people like Richard. And Richard spent the time from 7 years old to 21 at the Langhorne School. So basically, my husband Ray grew up an only child. He said one day there all of a sudden this man came home and he wasn't really sure quite who he was. But my point is what the things Mary and her dad did to help Richard, who became my children's favorite, drove me crazy. But became my children's favorite. And where I was going is, I can remember when Ray and I, when Ray came and you know, I asked my dad if it was okay if we got married, and there were a couple of qualifications my dad put down. He had to become a Catholic and he had to finish his college education. And my mother said, and Mary Beth, remember that Richard is going to be Ray's responsibility and you are going to have to take care of him. And I was like, oh, Mom, that's going to be such a long time for me. This isn't something I have to worry about. And didn't even, that was it. That was my response. And unfortunately, Ray's mother did not live that much longer. She died when she was 64. So, very suddenly, we were living in Philadelphia. I had three children, and Uncle Richard came to live with us. He lived with us for 25 years. And so family and taking care of family and how things that seem like they're only bad things, like what happened to Uncle Richard, but how the person he became, it was almost fun to watch that Jim started off as his best friend because he found out that Uncle could take him downtown and Jim could get Uncle to buy anything he wanted, all the ice cream. But about the age of 12, when Jim was about 12, or 13 or 14, Uncle wasn't quite keeping up the pace. So Ray became Uncle's best friend and they would get on the train and go downtown and then Mary Alice and then Patrick. And so profound influence on my kid's life. And on my daughter's choice of education, they both were special ed teachers, started out as special ed teachers. So,
right on. There you have it. All right.
Family and blessings.
All right.
Do you have any regrets?
It's a thing that. All right. Probably the one regret I have but it's balanced by the things. All right. My one regret, I loved my work. And some part of me regrets that I didn't pursue it. Because even when we were living in Nashville, Tennessee, after Mary Alice was born, my third child, I had help in the home. My husband grew up with help in his home, and he was the one who would bring someone in so I could do whatever I wanted to do, be it playing golf or mowing the lawn, but that I would have some time to myself. And when I think back, and I met one or two people later who had help raising their children and went back to work, and I think I would have been a little a different person than I am now. But on the bright side, I did spend that. None of my children went to nursery school. They were all home with me. I don't think there was some thought, was I hurting them being home with me? I don't think so. We went to the library for a story hour. We went to the pool. We did lots of things. But I lost some confidence in myself and what I could do. And then in Houston, Texas, we were living there. We moved a lot with IBM. IBM, Houston, me and I've been moved, not International Business Machines. But I enjoyed it. We enjoyed the different parts of the world, or country that we lived. Had an opportunity to live in Thailand, but we didn't take that one up. So that was plus. Being with the kids was a plus. But when Mary Alice, our third child, started to college, we needed some more money, and I had to go back to work. And they were looking for someone to help in the church office, in the church education office. And I went and applied for the job. Ray and Mary Alice, my husband and daughter, very much encouraged me. I was not in a good place. My younger two children were back in school. I was a little lost. And I came out, and I wanted that job so badly. And the salary was $4.50 an hour. Mm. And it was part-time. And this was a girl who left her sorority house with the biggest check that anyone had ever seen. And I was off to, it hit me really, really hard. But I took that job. I worked part-time. It was not my favorite job ever, but a position to open. This was a huge parish, St. John Vianney in Houston, Texas. Everything Texas is big. The receptionist position in the main office opened, and I applied for that. It was a full-time job. Elizabeth, our youngest, was in first grade, but her school was across the street from the church, so she could walk over, and the church was fine with me having her there. Patrick was old enough he could go home by himself, and the other guys were off. Yeah. So it worked, and I went to work full-time for a wonderful, wonderful man, priest, Father Joe, and the parish was exciting and growing, and they wanted to bring in a computer system, and I was like, this was great. I used to work in computers. So Father Joe was, all right, bring it in. And I was like, holy cow. I went home, and I said, great, I want to do this, but I don't know. I haven't worked in computers in 20 years. They changed a bit. They weren't whole roomfuls anymore. And Ray said, I'll help you. We'll do this. And so we ordered a System 36. Ray did all the specs on where they had to go. We had a wonderful man at the parish who was an electrician, and he figured everything out. I didn't have to do that. And so we figured all the terminals and things we needed. And one day I went to work, and all these boxes were delivered, and I opened the boxes, and they were full of parts I had to put together.
absolutely no idea what I was doing. Fortunately, they sent me some pages with instructions. Long story short, Ray was there, and we snapped all those plastic pieces together and put the System 36 together, and it actually ran, and I was actually able to program it and start it on the way. Not too long after that happened, we were transferred to Raleigh, North Carolina, and with my System 36 experience, I was able to go to work for Meredith College. Worked there for 13 years. Wonderful, wonderful career, records management in the admissions office and on their computer committee to keep studying their computers and bringing them up to date. I retired from there with a little more of my confidence restored.
Right on.
So it's a mixed bag. Okay, why are the answers so long?
No, oh please, yes. Well, everybody tells me I talk a lot.
Yeah, you know what?
Real quick here at the end, what are you most grateful for? And maybe, you know.
Most grateful for, you mean aside from my family and my kids and and my beautiful 16 grandchildren and my wonderful husband who's downstairs, was the day Ray and I had always wanted to see our national parks. It's something, a trip we always wanted to take with the kids, and the time was never right. It just was always something happening. And in 2004 or 5, now I can't remember, 2005,
right.
Patrick and Elizabeth had graduated from college. They were married, and we retired to our home down in Beaufort on the North River down there, beautiful place. And we decided, okay, we can take this trip. And we packed up camping. I had been camping once before in my life, but we packed up camping. Ray was a big camper. And we headed out. And we spent 3 weeks traveling out west in the parks out there, freezing to death. And some nights we say we would sit in the car and eat our dinner because it was so cold. It was May that we headed out. May, and when we were to go to the Grand Canyon, they couldn't honor our reservation because the snow was too high, so we had to wait 2 days. And at any rate, it was cold. And we'd sit in the car and eat our dinner and have our glass of scotch, and then we go to bed in the camp, in our tent.
Family and the ability to hit the road.
It was great, and while we were traveling, we met people who volunteered in the national parks out there. And as we were driving home, we drove home very quickly from the Painted Desert. We drove home in 2 days because we had to get back. We were done with our trip. And on the first day, all I kept thinking was, we should do this. We should be volunteers in the national park. And I know my husband well enough that if I asked him that question, we were doing it. So I thought about it for the whole 2 days. I don't think I talked to him. I thought about it because I'm not a camper. We'd have to buy an RV and live in an RV. We would have to sell our home because we would be gone for years. And we loved that place. But at the same time, we had been there. We had renovated it. We lived there for 5 years after the renovations. We've been down there maybe 10 years. But we had played a lot of golf. We had fished a lot of fish. And we were getting bored. And my husband particularly, my husband does not sit still well, thank goodness. So I said, Ray, what do you think? We want to find out about becoming volunteers in the National Park. He said, yes. And so he went home, made a slide presentation on about the National Parks, about what we were thinking of doing. We researched RVs. We went to Indiana, where they make most of the RVs. We toured factories. We figured out what we wanted. We came home. All our family was together the 4th of July that summer, and Ray showed them his slide presentation about being volunteers in the National Park. Needless to say, the kids were all in favor, and we left and have had the most amazing, amazing time. So why does it make me cry?
Because it's amazing. we're hitting the time here.
I advise anybody to do that.
Thank you for being my mom. Thank you for doing this interview.
You're